Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday. It's the 12th of September. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Are you there, Nate?
I'm here. Leslie, can you hear me?
Yep, sure can.
Perfect. All right. Yeah, happy Monday, guys. Hopefully it was a nice weekend, even though we had smoke and haze across a lot of northern Utah. Today, we're going to start off seeing more of the same. We have mostly clear skies, a little bit of course, patchy smoke out there. Air quality should improve. It will improve, in fact, as we get into this week. We're expecting our southerly flow that's in place currently to push the smoke north, but it's also going to bring in some subtropical moisture. We've got remnants of Hurricane K moving into southwestern U.S., and that moisture is getting pushed into Utah, southern Utah today, northern Utah tonight into tomorrow. So we still have lots of sun today, 81 for the high in Park City, overnight lows near 52. Plan on showers increasing overnight, possibly a thunderstorm. With showers and thunderstorms on Tuesday, much cooler temperatures, about 69 degrees tomorrow, so near 70. A lot of the smoke should be cleared out tomorrow, especially with some of the rain coming down. Showers and thunderstorms are going to be in the forecast Wednesday, mid-60s for highs, and on Thursday. In fact, I think we're going to keep a little bit of moisture lingering even into Friday. So definitely going to cool off up in Park City throughout this week from the low 80s today. And we're expecting a high of just 67 on Friday with a slight chance of showers. And it looks like another storm system should come in right behind this exiting moisture throughout the week. This week, we could have more showers and thunderstorms in the mix for Saturday, Sunday. Temperatures will be in the low 70s for highs. So here's this active fall weather we were hoping for. Now we got it all week long. Leslie?
Okay. Hey, thanks, Nate.
You bet.
KPCW News Time now, 8:08. Well, stay tuned. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll be checking in with Summit County Health Department Director Dr. Phil Bondurant with his monthly update, including the latest on the bivalent booster. Park City Mayor Dan Worrell and Summit County Council Member Melina Stevens will be with us with details on the kickoff of the Summit County Olympic Bid Listening Tour, and Park City Education Foundation Programs Director Kara Cody with details on one of the organization's 8 signature initiatives, PCCAP, celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. And coming up on Mountain Money right after the local news hour, today's guests include Jesse Jenkins, an assistant professor of engineering at Princeton University. He helps us understand the economic implications of the environmental provisions of the Inflation Reduction Act. Then Tom Derbyshire is one of the writers of the 1998 Pizza Hut commercial starring Mikhail Gorbachev. He shares the background of the commercial and the significance now 24 years later. Get all of that coming up during this today's edition of Mountain Money. You can hear Mountain Money, of course, every weekday, Monday, between 9 and 10.
Fall is fast approaching, and so are the moose. They are looking for mates, hanging out with their calves, and wandering the streets. Carol Dalton, a longtime resident of Park City, lives on the uphill side of the rail trail area called Chatham Hills. She said neighbors have been on moose watch.
And I mean, we even text each other when the moose are moving. Oh, they're coming your way. Get your dogs in, you know. Joe and I put out water because it's been so hot and dry, and they've been, you know, it's kind of on a corner of our yard where they're not disturbed and they know where it is. And, you know, the baby came down and drank. And the mother, she's got a lot of personality. I mean, we've really all gotten to know them pretty well. And love them.
Dalton said when she learned the moose had been relocated by the Department of Natural Resources, she was shocked and confused by the decision. Ryan Miller also lives in the neighborhood and was part of the neighbor's moose watch. He and his wife were on the rail trail last week when they saw police and people gathered around a trailer.
And, you know, we were both really hoping that it was that we weren't going to see the moose that live in our front yard peacefully in that trailer. And when we got to the trailer, that's exactly what we saw. We saw both the mother and the baby, not quite conscious with the mother, appearing to, having a hard time waking up. And they woke up the baby while we were there. It took a while before the mother moose started to stir, but it was pretty sad to watch.
Scott Root is the regional outreach manager for the DNR. He said the only reason the DNR relocate moose is for public safety, but moose safety is also a concern. He said the DNR received a call that the moose was acting aggressively, so a team went out with biologists to observe her and the calf.
and people, it was kind of by a running trail and such, and she was starting to become a little aggressive. She didn't charge anybody, but she would, you know, pin her ears back and stomp her hoof. And some of these people were just kind of unintentionally encountering her. You know, they'd come around the corner and, oh, there she is. And of course, she's a protective mother, a good mother.
Because the animals were in a residential neighborhood, Root said herding them back into the mountains wasn't going to be easy. That's when the DNR biologist decided to tranquilize and relocate them to the mountains off Highway 40. He said when moose are tranquilized, experts do health assessments and put GPS radio collars on them so they can be tracked.
You know, we'll check nasal cavities, the hoofs, the legs, the mouth. We'll kind of do the eyes and ears. We just kind of look them over really well. And occasionally we'll take a blood sample, and we did, you know, for to monitor if there's any disease. And we also like to look them over to see if they have a heavy tick load. But fortunately, the last three moose, they really didn't have ticks. At least we could see visibly. So that was kind of encouraging.
Root said the last moose relocation was in March when one was hanging around the high school. He wants the public to know it's a last resort.
We understand how everybody feels in Park City, especially if you're lucky enough to have a moose that's kind of passing through here and there, and they're so beautiful. But, you know, it's our responsibility and it's our duty if they do kind of present a safety risk. We often have to relocate, but it's not something we're, you know, rushing to do. We need to respond to the public and for any type of, you know, safety risks that are out there with wildlife.
An adult moose can weigh 800 to 1,200 pounds, and bulls can stand 6 feet tall. Mating season begins in late September and continues through mid-October. Andrea Buchanan, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:14. Joining me now in the studio with an update from the Summit County Health Department, I have Department Director Phil Bondurant. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So since we last spoke, the new, bivalent?
Bivalent, yes.
Bivalent boosters have made their way to Utah. So tell us, what's the latest there?
Yeah, definitely good news in our continued fight against COVID-19 and the effects that stem from that. So early last week, we started administering both Pfizer and Moderna bivalent boosters at all three locations here in Summit County at our Summit County Health Department offices. And what's different about this booster versus the previous monovalent boosters is that this is engineered in a way that it's specific to the BA4 and BA5 Omicron variants. So we've learned over the last few months that those variants have the ability to evade the immune system and the protections offered by that monovalent booster that many folks received earlier this year. And through some modern science and quite honestly medical marvel, we now have a bivalent booster that's specific to these genetic mutations in the coronavirus itself, and therefore offer additional protections moving into the fall.
Yeah, so why is it so easy to change these boosters? I mean, you know, you look back at history, you know, and it took years to do like a polio or a smallpox vaccine, and now we can change these up in just a matter of months.
Yeah, and I don't pretend to be an immunologist or a geneticist by any means, but just based on the little information that I do know, the technologies that are available through the mRNA vaccines is pretty miraculous. And it's something that we are going to see a lot more medical benefits from in the near future. You know, we've seen similar, I guess, advancements through the flu vaccine, where they have a flu vaccine each year that's specific to a predicted variant of the flu that will be present. And they're using some of that same way of thinking and same science to predict or to make changes to the COVID vaccine. And so with that being said, and not quite understanding all of the science behind it, it's pretty cool that we have these specific vaccines. And I suspect that in the coming years that we'll continue to see something very similar, specific to what we see based on Omicron, based on other variants, and then of course flu. We're hoping that in 2023 or somewhere near that time frame that we'll see a COVID-19/flu shot that you can get it all done in one shot.
Yeah. So we are convinced though that one, they are safe, and two, effective.
based on what we've been told by the FDA and the CDC and the scientific evaluation and studies that they've done with that emergency use authorization, what that means is that the booster and what it offers, the protections are greater than the risk of what happens if you get COVID-19 or a severe complication with COVID-19. So they do offer protections and keep the, especially those that are immunocompromised, they keep us safe and out of the hospital and keep us from experiencing severe outcomes with COVID-19.
Yeah. So what's to say, though, that we're not already with the BA6 and the BA7? Right? I mean, because it's like the 4 and the 5 are kind of passe at this point now.
Yeah. I mean, as we've learned throughout this entire pandemic is as these new variants pop up, they tend to have circulated the world most likely before we really find them here. And so as it has been with previous boosters, they offer a level of protection, maybe not entire protection with some of the genetic mutations that take place. However, that level of protection and keeping us healthy increases with each of the different bivalent boosters that we have. So we suspect that we'll see additional variants in that come along. And so with that, modern science and medical marvels, we'll continue to see bivalent boosters.
So are these boosters now available for anyone who wants one, or is there a waiting list?
We do have appointments available at the health department. They're Pfizer and Moderna. If you are looking for the Pfizer, you're 12 and older, are eligible for the Pfizer bivalent booster. Moderna is 18 and older. And the CDC recommendation and FDA approval is that anybody that receives these needs to be 2 months removed from their most recent dose.
Okay. Are those still free or?
Yes. Yep.
All right. Anything else you want people to know about those?
Nope. Feel free to call any of the three health department offices, whether it's Colville, Camas, or the Park City office, and make an appointment with our staff there, and we're happy to get you in.
All right. Let's see. Coming up, you've got the COVID-19 after action report. Is this complete and you're going to present it sometime soon or?
Yeah. So anytime there's a significant event like a pandemic response, there's an obligation for the health department to create an after action report. Currently, staff are working on that. And the plan is that we'll present to the Board of Health on November 7th. Followed by a presentation to the County Council on November 9th, and then a presentation to the Park City Council on the 16th of November. During that time, we'll be making revisions and edits prior to those presentation dates. And then once it goes live with the presentation to the Board of Health on the 7th, we'll post it on our website, and it will be available to the general public for review as well.
All right. And then does it go somewhere else? Does it go to the state, to the federal government at all, or is it just internal here?
No, it will stay internal, but it'll also be sent to the State Department of Health and Human Services, at which time they will combine those with the other 13, or the, excuse me, the other 12 health departments, along with their after action report. And then that will be sent to the federal government as the state of Utah's after action report for COVID-19.
So was this a mandated report?
It is, it's not mandated by rule, but it is part of our obligation. So the expectation is that, yeah, we'll put together a report along with the other 12 health departments and then the state health department for a federal report that will be used to help us be better should we find ourselves in this situation again.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, I mean, is COVID-19, I mean, just kind of a once-in-a-lifetime event, or should we expect to see something like that happen again?
I would like to say that we wouldn't, but, you know, you look at the timeline between H1N1 that's occurred and some of the smaller things that have, public health events that have occurred between that time and now. And hopefully we don't see another situation like COVID-19, but I suspect that there's always going to be challenges to our population when it comes to public health. We're seeing a small situation with monkeypox right now in the United States and globally. And so while I hope that monkeypox does not reach the level that COVID did, we're always on alert and aware of what's taking place, which is why we have epidemiologists and we have people that are constantly reviewing cases and communicable diseases and stuff to make sure that we're ahead of the game and that we can hopefully be prepared should something come our way.
And did we ever get to the bottom of COVID-19? I mean, how it happened, why it happened?
There's been a few papers that have come out, some research that suggests the origin of the COVID-19 virus, but I don't know that they'll ever be able to truly determine what took place, and I don't know if that's due to lack of information or availability of information, but nonetheless, I think at this point we've got a fair understanding of what COVID-19 is and should be able to react and plan accordingly based on what we know.
All right. And a sneak peek, anything that you have learned, at this point doing this report?
Right now, I think, as we do with any type of event where we follow up a report out, it's communication. I know in my conversations with elected officials across the county that communication is always one of those things that we can improve upon, whether it was the delivery of conversations about mask or face covering requirements or other actions taken to limit the spread of COVID-19, we can always communicate better. And so we continue to evaluate that. We are really excited about the health equity piece that we have and some of the things that were done with our coordinating partners to get vaccines out to our entire population, even when there was a distrust among state and local governments. So those health equity pieces are really encouraging and something that we hope to build off moving forward.
All right. Summit County has a new COVID-19 dashboard up and running. What's different about this one?
Well, one of the things that many of the folks in Summit County and the state have come to rely on is the CDC County Tracker. And with that, we found there to be some concerning metrics or data points that were used by the CDC. And one of the biggest one was the regionalization of hospitalizations. So what the CDC does is they draw a bubble around hospitals that might serve Summit County residents. And so when we looked at those numbers, some of our hospital admission estimates from the CDC included hospitalization numbers for Ogden and Salt Lake, because in certain cases, individuals in Summit County do attend hospitals on the Wasatch Front for services. They're called catchment areas. With our new epidemiologist, Nancy Porter, she quickly identified where that was occurring and how, and then made contact with our hospital here to get relevant, timely numbers specific to Summit County. And what we've come to learn is that the way hospitalizations are counted is that if, let's say, somebody hurt their ankle that required surgery during an event, and they showed up and they were asymptomatic, but they tested positive for COVID, that was considered a hospitalization, even though they were there for an entirely different issue. So delineating between with COVID and for COVID hospitalizations is extremely important. So what we've been able to do through the work of staff is identify with versus for COVID, as well as those hospital catchment areas, and create our own county tracker, which puts transmission levels at low, medium, and high, similar to what the CDC is doing, but using data locally rather than using those catchment areas. And so while we have linked the CDC website on our dashboard, we also are using our own metrics to determine low, medium, and high. And according to what Nancy has shared with me, there's only two health departments in the nation that are doing that right now. One is back east, and then the Summit County Health Department is now doing that now. So I'm really proud of what we've been able to accomplish in just a short amount of time looking and reevaluating how this dashboard is used.
All right. Are the cases being reported now even accurate? They're just best guesses, right?
Yeah, speaking plainly, no, they're not accurate. I think we all know somebody right now that probably has COVID or that is getting over COVID, and that was determined by an at-home test that was either given at a job site or picked up at one of our local pharmacies or stores. Individuals identify that they have COVID and they stay home and it's not officially reported. So while that's not a bad thing, we want people to know what they're dealing with. It's also a positive and an advancement of where we're at in this response, is that people are acknowledging that they do have something and they're staying home, staying away from work. And so, or staying away from school or other events that where they could potentially infect others. So we're Definitely not relying on case counts the same way that we did just a year ago at this time. And as we move forward, we'll continue to use them as a cautionary advisement, but they're definitely not how we're planning moving forward.
Yeah, so if somebody does test positive at home, I mean, are they supposed to let the county know, or do they talk to their physician, or, I mean, what are you supposed to do?
Well, if you test positive and you are experiencing severe symptoms, we always encourage you to either visit your primary care physician or some medical provider that can determine the best course of action moving forward. But if I were to test at home, I would not be required to report that test to the state. So right now, the only tests that are being reported to the state and used for data are those that are done at official testing sites, like those that are for us Tuesday and or Thursday in Camas and Colville, and then 5 days a week at the health department testing site at the Quinns Junction location.
And as in terms of deaths, and I mean, are we still like under 20, huh?
Yeah, our last fatality due to COVID-19 was June 22nd of this year.
Okay, and that marked what number?
I don't have that offhand, but yeah. I know it's I believe somewhere in the mid 20s.
Yeah, okay. Let's see, and you do continue to put the COVID wastewater trends on the dashboard as well?
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Polio. Are we seeing any cases of that in our area?
Not that I'm aware of. Polio is something that they definitely are starting to look for in wastewater, and I believe there's a grant through the CDC for the state to begin doing that. In some of the research, there's been some success stories out of Europe and where they've been able to identify polio in neighborhoods and then have individuals vaccinated against that. But as I understand it now, there's nothing of alarm or concern here. But as we've learned with anything in public health, when you start looking for things, you start finding things. And so what that means for local public health once that surveillance begins is still to be determined.
All right. You've got a mammogram and cancer screening bus being set up in Colville. Whose bus is it? The county's?
No. So this is a partnership between Summit County Health Department and Colville City to bring the mammogram screening bus from the Utah Department of Health and Human Services and Huntsman Cancer Center and the University of Utah to Colville under the request of Mayor Marsh. And so what we've done is this has been a service that's been available here in Park City, but we haven't been able to expand the way that we would like into our other areas on the east side because of restrictions from COVID and limited resources. But now through that conversation with Mayor Marsh and Colville City, we've been able to bring the bus to Colville. Mayor Marsh has made accommodations to park it right in front of Colville City offices. They also are advertising this on their website through their council meetings. And I'm excited about what's been accomplished and what we're going to be able to do with this. We plan to make this a couple times a year sort of thing, where our next stop is hopefully Camas and getting something done in Camas as well. But we've learned that through COVID, as with many folks, breast cancer screenings and mammograms have been on the downside. They haven't been taking or we haven't been providing those services. And there's a variety of reasons for that. And so as we get back into the swing of things for traditional public health, this is one of those spots where we feel we can have the greatest impact. So we're really excited about getting that into North Summit. You know, through the Affordable Care Act, if you don't already have insurance, most of the mammograms are free. And so hopefully we can make it more convenient for the residents of North Summit and hopefully get them in and get that screening done.
All right. How do they make an appointment?
Yeah, so they can call our health department office there in Colville, 435-336-3234. And they can speak with Brecklin. She's great. She's very good on the phones and can get an appointment set up. We would like to have those appointments reserved before the 15th, so this week, so that we can make sure that we have adequate staffing in that there so that people can receive services quickly and be in and out, so that if it's on a lunch break or something else, that we are considerate of their time as well.
All right. And just finally wanted to mention the mental health open houses happening this week. We've got a few folks from the Mental Health Alliance coming on Wednesday, but the first open house happening tomorrow.
Yeah, September 13th from 5:30 to 8 over at the Richens building, so the library area over there. You know, this 5 years ago, this a similar process was put in place, and the benefits and the outcomes associated with this process have been phenomenal. And I would suspect that the Alliance will have very similar results, but for that to happen, we need input from the public. You know, it's estimated that 1 in 3 people in Summit County suffer from mental illness. And so for us to understand what's needed in this community, we need folks to share with us what's on their mind. We've made great strides. We've seen improved outcomes, and we've had some real success stories. But for that to happen, this is the process that determines what the course of action is for the next 5 years. So September 13th, 5:30 to 8, September 15th, 5:30 to 8 at the Park City Library. We encourage you to come out, no RSVP needed, just show up, share your thoughts, concerns with the group that are there, and they're excited to see you.
Okay, it's an open house format, come and go, there's not...
I believe so, yes.
Formalized presentation. Yep. All right, anything else you wanted to mention?
No, thanks for having us, and look forward to the changing of the seasons and all that's good to come.
Okay, Phil, see you next month, thank you.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Phil Bondurant, Summit County Health Department Director. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. News time now, 8:33. 8:34. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, 6 dates, including 1 remote meeting, have been set for residents to let city and county officials know what they think about Utah's efforts to secure the bid for the 2030 or 2034 Olympic Winter Games. That listening tour kicks off tomorrow. In the studio to tell us more about it, I have Park City Mayor Nan Worrell, Summit County Council Member Melina Stevens, and the Executive Director of the Mountain Mediation Center, Gretchen Lee. Good morning, all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Gretchen, this is the work of the Mediation Center, part of your community conversations, or is it something different?
Yeah, no, it is. It's very consistent with what we've been doing out in the community with our community conversations. The city and county reached out to us several months ago about facilitating these conversations so citizens of Summit County can be heard on their thoughts and concerns about the upcoming potential Olympics.
Okay, so why did it make sense to use the Mediation Center? I mean, are you seeing this kind of a third-party objective?
Yes, that's what we do. As these community conversations, we're neutral, and we facilitate the conversations. We are not pro-Olympics. We're not anti-Olympics. We want to get people out to talk about the Olympics so they can express their hopes, desires, and also their concerns.
All right. As I mentioned, the first conversation is happening tomorrow. That's going to be in Camas. Do you want to give us just kind of the rundown and the schedule?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, so tomorrow night we're having one at the Camas Library. They are all 6 to 8 p.m. Then we are switching to online because we want to provide an opportunity for everybody to, you know, if they can't get to one in person. So we're doing one on Zoom September 20th. Then we move to the library the 22nd, the Christian Center the 28th. We're hoping to do, these are all bilingual, but the 28th one we're hoping to switch it up and have it primarily in Spanish translating to English. The 29th of September, we're moving over to Colville at the Ledges Event Center. And then we're going to wrap things up October 6th at the Park City Library. And again, they're all 6 to 8 p.m.
Okay, so the one on the 26th is at the Kimball Junction Library?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So they are going to be bilingual, is that what you said?
Yes. Yeah. We'll have translation there for each conversation. But again, the one on the 28th, we are really hoping to sort of flip it up and do it Spanish, translating to English.
Okay, so Nan and Melina, have you committed then to being at all of these as kind of representatives to the Salt Lake Bid Committee?
No, we, both Melina and I, participated in a video with Tom Kelly that's going to be shown at the beginning of each of these sessions. We don't want to, sometimes we might be able to skew some of the opinions in the room, or people might say something because they think that's what we want to hear. So we're not going to be there. We want these to be neutral conversations.
Okay. And so again, you serve also, Melina, on that committee?
Yes, I also serve, and that was the decision that as we went forward and really working with Gretchen and Mountain Mediation, it appeared to be the best option to really allow the community to come out in both an unbiased as possible way, but also an opportunity for them to really be able to get out all of their concerns, talk about, you know, the possibilities potentially, whatever they really want to, in a place that feels comfortable for them and in a place where there are professionals that are trained to be able to help facilitate those types of productive conversations. So I think we're hoping for a very productive conversation with some takeaways that we as Park City and Summit County Council can use to be able to determine how to move forward with subsequent outreach and what to do if we get a bid.
Yeah, and Melina, Gretchen, these community conversations have traditionally been, you know, they're not public. I mean, does this need to be different, though? I mean, right, you've kind of not media, that you didn't want it, whatever people had to say, it was kind of anonymous and not reported to the media. Is this going to be the same way, or do we need to hear all about this?
You know what, you're absolutely right, because that is one thing that we always... you know, maintain when we do these community conversations, it's a safe space and things are confidential. And this one, it is a little different because the city and the county do want to, you know, hear back from residents. But so I guess you'd say that we're doing a blend. It's going to be, you're not going to be identified of who you are, but there will be a post survey as you walk out of the room of, so you can express concerns, hopes, etc. But you will not be identified individually. We are going to be giving back general feedback to the city and the county.
Will it be based on what, zip code or something?
Yeah, I think we're doing it by community. Yeah, mm-hmm. So but you will stay anonymous, but it will be done by community.
All right. Well, Nan, I mean, the games are going to happen in Utah one way or the other. I mean, we can't stop that train. So I guess what good does this listening tour do?
I think it's going to give our residents a chance to talk about the opportunities that they see should another Olympics come to this area. I'm excited that we're doing it jointly with Summit County, because I think it's whatever happens in Park City certainly affects the rest of the county and vice versa. So I think it just gives people a chance to share what they see as opportunities, what might we be able to gain as a community were the Olympics to come, and it also gives people an opportunity to share what are they concerned about if they come and how might those concerns be mitigated.
Yeah, what are you going to be listening for? I mean, Melina, when all of this is tabulated.
I'm definitely interested and aligned with what Nan is saying as far as the opportunities and concerns. I think for myself personally, I'm most interested in looking at what are the concerns, and specifically, what are people concerned mostly about, the impacts of traffic? Is it impacts of having additional people in town during that time? Is there a perception that, you know, people are going to move and there's going to be an increase in just people afterwards? What are the primary concerns? I think we've all had conversations, you know, just out in public with just neighbors and friends and hear a little bit of that. But I'm very interested in really understanding what are the primary concerns throughout the community so that we can really look at how do we mitigate those if the Olympics comes, and what do we do as a community to make sure we preserve our quality of life and our, you know, the soul of this community.
Yeah, do we really have that opportunity to mitigate? Like I say, it's kind of like a train that do we really have that any say?
I mean, I believe we do as far as mitigating those impacts. I mean, can we say, no, absolutely not, we're not having an Olympics if our resorts are wanting to participate and we have, you know, vendors in town? I mean, I don't know that we can say, no, Olympics don't come here. But if we're saying, oh, the community is really concerned about traffic, I think that allows us to pursue additional grant funding or have additional leverage with the legislature to be able to move forward on potentially some infrastructure improvements that for the games that would have a long-term impact on the community. I think there's some opportunities there as we tease out what are the primary concerns. So,
yeah, and that's what I've kind of already heard, though, Nan, is that this is not about building and getting new things like we did with the 2002 games, where we saw flyovers and new interstate exchanges. Do we? Is there money to do any of this, you know, improvements and making, you know, kind of that trade-off?
You know, their tax dollars won't be spent. We've been assured of that. Whether some other monies come in or not, I don't know. that for sure at this point in time. I think it's a little premature to be talking about that. One of the things about these conversations that I'm really excited about is that Tom Kelly and others on the bid committee have put together a fact sheet, an FAQ sheet, because there's a lot of misinformation out there about, well, if we just say we don't want the games, then they'll stop. No, that's not true. And there's also some other misinformation. So this fact sheet's going to be part of these conversations, and it's going to give just a very basic overview of what are the realities here.
Yeah. During last year's campaign, you had said that you hadn't been here during the 2002 games, and you thought that you'd like to see what that excitement was all about. Now you're taking a step back and saying you're going to just listen to what people have to say about them?
Well, sure. I want to hear what the community has to say. What I think personally, you know, is I would like to experience that, the excitement of the games. But I wasn't here. I don't know all the impacts. You know, I talked to people that were here, and, you know, I hear both sides from them.
Yeah. What about you, Melina? Were you here in 02?
I was not here in 02. I moved to Utah in 2003, so I just missed it. But I agree with Nan. I think that there's some stories you hear from members of the community about some really incredible experiences that they had during 2002 in the Olympics and having the Olympics right here. You also hear some concerns with some of the impacts afterwards that occurred. And so I am really curious. I think I'm approaching it with curiosity on both sides to really try to understand what is the best way forward for us now as a community. We've shifted and evolved and changed a lot over the last 20 years, and what does that look like as we move forward into the next 10 years, and how do we continue in a way that is true to who we are as a community now?
And Gretchen, in terms of the information that's collected, I mean, how is it being archived? Are you videotaping it? I mean, how will you know what people have to say? How is that going to be recorded?
So what we are doing, we will not be recording the actual conversations themselves. Our facilitators are going to, and they will tell all participants before the conversation starts, that they are going to take general notes to sort of do a general consensus afterwards that we will forward on to the city and the county. Again, individuals will not be identified. And then as each participant leaves the conversation, they'll have an opportunity either via QR code to do a quick survey, or online on their phone, or we're also gonna have a paper survey there. So they will have an opportunity to, we're having a two-way street of way that they're going to get feedback directly to, we're going to get feedback to the city and the county.
Okay, and it's not just kind of a multiple choice or most likely, not likely. Will it be an opportunity for people to put in their comments?
Yes, exactly. And it's going to be short, it'll be brief, it is not, and it'll be summarized, but it will give people an opportunity to put their comments in, and the information will be forwarded directly to the city and the county.
Okay, and then will you each do some kind of presentation on the city and county level?
We will. We'll be discussing it among our councils.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. We want to be able to look at that and understand that collectively so that we can determine, again, what the best way to do subsequent outreach. This is a first step, not the only time that people have to give input. And so we'll see what subsequent outreach looks like from that and where to move forward in some of these areas.
Okay, so five physical locations and then a virtual location. How would somebody get that Zoom link to participate?
Yeah, if they want to go on to our new website, which is mountainmediationcenter.org, right on the front page, they can sign up for any of those locations.
All right, anybody else want to add anything?
Mm-hmm. I think just that we're really excited to hear from the community and really encourage people to participate in these conversations. The more input that we can have, the better we can move forward into the future with this in regards to this matter.
Okay. Melina, Dan, and Gretchen, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:47. We'll be back right after this. It's 8:48. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City Education Foundation's annual Beat the Call is in full swing. And on the phone with an update from the foundation, I have Programs Director Kara Cody. Good morning, Kara.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks. So before we get to the details of Beat the Call, give us just a quick background about what we have and I guess, about why we have an education foundation when more than half of our local property taxes go to pay for education.
Well, yeah, also just want to just remind the community that Utah is the lowest funded public education system in the country, and 96% of the state collected education tax dollars are redistributed to other districts. So, you know, we do certainly have a need to help fund quality programs in our Park City schools to ensure that our students get the best education possible.
Okay, so all of the money raised here stays here.
No, not for state collected education.
No, I mean for the foundation.
Correct. Yes. Exactly. Every dollar that we raise through the Education Foundation stays in our Park City public schools. The whole idea with Beat the Call is we ask families, you know, to give what they can, but just want to remind them that there are 180 days in the school year, and so we just ask for a dollar a day. So give $180. So a lovely high school student doesn't call you in October just to remind you to give. And all of those dollars raised stay in Park City to support programs like TC CAPS, Real World Learning, and just other high-impact programs.
So when did that kick off?
It kicked off, actually, you know, technically last week, but any donation that is made starting July 1 will help you beat getting a phone call from a student.
All right. What kind of response are you seeing?
I'm seeing, great response. You know, people are definitely excited to support the foundation. Just a lot of excitement. We do, you know, competitions with the schools, and the competitions are based on percentage of participation, not necessarily on dollars raised. And, just our families are excited to support our educators and support our schools here in Park City.
Okay. And as you mentioned, money that is raised privately through the Ed Foundation that doesn't go back to the state does support what you've come up with, the 8 signature initiatives. So what are those?
Correct. Our 8 signature initiatives are the Park City School District Preschool Program, the Elementary Visual Arts, also known as EVA program, after school programs, elementary schools at Ecker Hill, as well as the MASA program at Treasure Mountain Junior High, the PC CAPS program, Bright Futures program, Innovation Lab, as well as Educator Wellness, and our Real World Learning, which is a new initiative.
Ah, okay. And so how is that different than PC CAPS?
Well, PC CAPS is one part of Real World Learning, but you also want to recognize that it's other STEAM programs. That's science, technology, engineering, art, and math, as well as CTE, which is college and technical education, just recognizing that hands-on learning and real-world learning opportunities benefit our students, and PC CAPS is one part of that initiative.
Okay, and you're celebrating PC CAPS 10th anniversary.
Yes, so exciting that hard to believe that it's been 10 years. He's supporting that program in at Park City High School. And that program is for juniors and seniors, and they get to do real-world projects for real businesses or nonprofits. They're guided by teachers and mentored by experts in the community. And it's been 10 years, and if people want to learn more, we are doing a virtual visit on Friday, September 30th. At 10:30 a.m., and we invite people just to sign up for that visit on our website to get more information. It's just an opportunity to hear from students and educators about that program. Really exciting. We're going to have some alumni from Park City High School joining as well to share how that program has impacted not only when they were in high school, but has helped them throughout their college career as well.
Yeah. Any idea how many the number of students who have gone through the program?
Oh my gosh, I think it is just shy of 1,000 students that have gone through total in the 10 years. It started out 10 years ago with 30 students, taking the class each semester, and now it's well over 100 students. each semester that get to participate.
Right, and it used to be off campus when you had rented a place in Prospector. It was brought back on campus, and what, they meet out of the old library?
Yep, the old library, and you know, with the you know, realignment and doing the work on the schools, there will be a little bit more, you know, even more space for the PCCAPS program.
Okay. Again, you've got the high school students making those phone calls to beat the call. Starting when?
That'll be starting in early October. So, you know, we've got some time. You know, beat the call ends on September 16th. For all of the schools except for the high school. The high school will go until September 23rd this year. So still got time this week to make your donation. You know, families out there, you can either make it online on our website, pcef4kids.org, or an envelope will be coming home with your student if it hasn't already, and you can make a donation that way as well. So a couple different ways to give.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
You know, just want to thank the community, you know, for, you know, supporting the Ed Foundation for almost, you know, 40 years now. You know, we can't do it without our donors and volunteers. So thank you, everyone, so much, and hope everybody's kiddos are having a great back to school.
Okay. Kara, thanks for your time this morning.
Okay. Yep. Thank you, Leslie.
Kara Cody is the Programs Director for the Park City Education Foundation. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. News time now, 8:55. Well, the Park City Miners welcomed the Murray Spartans for homecoming Friday night, and the Miners looked to bounce back after suffering a tough loss to East High School the week before. KPCW's Mitchell Elliott has more about the game.
The Park City Miners took on the Murray Spartans this past Friday, and after a sluggish performance last week against East, the Miners had something to prove. This game was also the second game in a row that the Miners played without their starting quarterback, Chase Beyer. Park City came out of the gates hot with a 70-yard kick return from William McCurdy, turning into an easy touchdown to wide receiver Miles Preston on the first drive of the game. The Miners refused to take their foot off the gas as they proceeded to score a whopping 6 unanswered touchdowns to end the half up 46-0. The Miners cruised through the second half, finishing the night with a 53-0 shutout over the Spartans. With that, the Miners improved to 4-1 on the season. The Miners will hit the road next week to take on the Highland Rams. Coverage starts at 7 p.m. right here on KPCW. The South Summit Wildcats took on the Ogden Tigers this past weekend, and South Summit looked to continue their perfect season. South Summit found success on the ground as running back Caleb B. Thompson ripped off 2 touchdowns in the first half, securing a 14-0 lead. The Wildcats finished the cat fight with a win over the Tigers, 28-0. South Summit will also hit the road next week to take on the Emory Spartans. North Summit was on the road this past week to take on the 4-0 Kanab Cowboys, and the Kanab Cowboys took care of business. The Cowboys' game plan focused on running back Griffin Bone, as he had a whopping 4 touchdowns in the first half. The game finished 30-13 in favor of Kanab. North Summit will drop yet another game this season, sliding to a 1-4 record. North Summit will look to recoup as they return home next week to take on the Parowan Rams. Finally, after a rough loss to Pleasant Grove last week, the Wasatch Wasps looked to get back on track against the Salem Hills Skyhawks at home. The Wasps scored methodically and explosively, with most notably a 99-yard touchdown return from Joseph Heyer padding the score for Wasatch. The Wasps finished up the half 28-19 over the Skyhawks. Wasatch then poured on the points in the second half, finishing the game up 63-26. The Wasps will now improve to 2-3 on the season. The Wasps will take flight over to Maple Mountain next week as they look to take on the Golden Eagles. We will see if the Wasps can get 2 birds with 1 stone. For KPCW, I'm Mitchell Elliott.
KPCW News Time now, 8:58. Well, the International Olympic Committee announced last week that cities that want to host the 2030 Olympic Winter Games will have to wait a while to learn where those games will be hosted. According to a report on gamesbid.com, the IOC announced the delay after putting India's National Olympic Committee on notice for failing to meet required standards to host an all-member session next year, which then postponed that meeting. The IOC's decision impacts invested bidding communities like Salt Lake City, Sapporo, and Vancouver. According to the report, those cities could have to wait at least 4 months longer than expected to learn where the 2030 Olympic Games will be hosted. Earlier this year, IOC President Thomas Bach said that candidates for the 2030 election would be named by the executive board in December. IOC spokesperson Mark Adams, though, told GamesBid.com that bidders would be briefed on the IOC of the evolving situation and timing. A delay would likely be welcome news to the British Columbia Canada Bid Committee. The Indigenous-led project to bring the Games back to the Vancouver area is facing timing issues with federal and provincial partners who aren't ready to approve a bid. For Sapporo, a delay could help distance the Japanese bid from the negativity of recent Tokyo 2020 bribery allegations. An organizing committee member has been accused of taking payments from potential sponsors for preferential treatment. The United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee has yet to confirm whether it will target the 2030 or 2034 games with Salt Lake City, but has hinted that 2034 is most likely. Salt Lake bid officials, though, have repeatedly said that they will be ready for either year. Meanwhile, the Utah Olympic bid starts its six-stop Summit County listening tour tomorrow. You can find out more on our website, kpcw.org. The next Winter Games are to be held in Italy by Milan Cortina in 2026. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Currently 57 degrees here in Old Town Park City. National Weather Service again calling for sunny and some patchy smoke, looking for a high today of 81. Right now in Heber City, we've got 49 degrees again with that patchy smoke and a high of 90. Stay tuned now for headline news and Mountain Money.